This is Sam Christopher, writer of episode 811, Captain Kidd. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
If you don't want to be on a diet of liquid cheeseburgers, shut the hell up and listen to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. Greetings, one and all. I am Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Special Agent Rory, and if you're lucky, I'll give you the GPS coordinates to my booty. Thanks for joining us yet again for number 96 on The Blacklist, Captain Kidd, written by Sam Christopher and directed by Andrew McCarthy. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
Hey, welcome back, Rory. So good that you are here. It's been like a whole pandemic year since we last talked to you.
Right, for real. I'm so happy to be back. I just want to talk me some Blacklist.
Yeah, every time Aaron goes away for this part of the year to the South by Southwest conference, even though he didn't go away, he watched a crap ton of movies over the last week. So he is resting his eyeballs and his voice as he prepares his South by Southwest presentation, which you can hear over on The Hollywood Outsider at thehollywoodoutsider.com. So hence Rory filling in, batting 1,000 as always. And
I try.
He was like, Can I come back? Can I come back and do the pirate episode? And then you realize that it's not really pirates. It's just some goofy kid that wants to think he's playing pirates.
Right. I saw Captain Kidd. I immediately went pirate. I was like, "Arr!" But, you know, hey, black dishes aren't important anymore at this point, are they?
We'll get into that later. But if you're new to the show, welcome. We could basically go over our profiling question forum the week before, where we close out last week's episode, then get into this week's case profile for Captain Kidd. No Red's rhetoric this week because we didn't have any good stories from him this week. So we'll just go into a deep dive in special agent intel where we get thoughts and theories from all of you, the fans, as we listen to the show. So with that, Rory, what was our profiling question from last week?
Well, the profiling question from last week was, what is your score of the season so far? And there's a lot of diversity in here. 60% said 1. What the hell are the writers doing? 16% said 2, Answers and Serenity Now. 6% said 3, Season 8 is becoming one of my favorites. 10% said 4, Good Enough for Friday. And 8% said 5, Amazing.
Wow.
We're a little divided.
A little divided, but I'm shocked that 60% said this is the worst season so far. Is that how you were interpreting that?
One? I mean, one of the Blacklist is still like an 8 for any other show, but I think we have such high demands and high hopes for this show that I guess people are starting to be a little let down.
Yeah, I don't know if this is playing into the whole concept of Liz and Red not being on the same side, and that's why people don't like it, or the fact that Liz has just gone altogether. Because there's obviously a community divided there. Some people are like, show's better without Liz. And some people are like, show's gone in the toilet since Liz left.
It kind of goes both ways. Because remember, we used to fight about this all the time. It was like, I love you. I hate you. I love you. It's kind of the same thing. And now that she's gone, people are like, you know, the show's kind of better without. No, it's not. No, come on. Be real. When you're sitting at home under the covers by yourself, you know the truth. You want Liz on the show.
And I think part of it, too, is that the Blacklisters that we've had this season so far, some of it was tied to the Liz mythology, where some of it, like this week, had nothing to do with Liz at all, which is what Aaron was saying that he preferred. He preferred an episode like this week's episode because it had nothing to do with Liz. Because if she's not right on the screen, then don't do anything with it. At the same time, none of these Blacklisters are super scary, in my opinion.
No, like, no.
Like, it doesn't make you like cringe like The Courier or The Alchemist or Stewmaker, or I mean, even the forecaster, which was the kid who was able to predict things in her head because of her retainer or whatever it was that was picking up the radio signals. I mean, they're interesting concepts. I don't know if then, like, I liked the Serenoid because I liked the concept of using other people. Now, is it far-fetched? Because why would someone actually give over their identity and lives to somebody else and put themselves in harm's way in order to do this? I'm sure there's people out there. They need the cash. They're going to do it.
But they call them mercenaries.
Yeah. I mean, the concepts are good. Like this week's, the concept was good. I enjoyed the concept of you know, having someone that's a geocacher criminal that brokers the information between two parties, the concept is great. I think the execution has been falling a little bit flat is the issue.
A little bit. I mean, I think to a certain extent, if you really look at it, this is almost like the courier. This is essentially what his job was, is to move things from point A to point B for people so they don't have to get in touch with each other. But when you really think about it, the ultimate goal wasn't anything to do with the kid. He wanted to know about Townsend. Obviously, Red doesn't know all that much about Neville Townsend.
Which is something we'll get into as we move into our case profile discussion. But first and foremost, our question for next week.
Who else besides Cooper is on the kill list?
Yeah, it seemed like he handed him a piece of paper that had a list of names.
Yeah, I thought that it was just a list of detailed instructions, because remember, he said everything must be followed to the letter. And it was all about Cooper. So I just assumed it was steps he had to take to eliminate Cooper.
Yeah, and see, I thought it was, when he said all the instructions must be followed, was that there's more than one name on the list. So what do you guys think? You tell us. Was there more names on the list, or was it just Cooper? We'll find out from all of you next week, because Rory and I are hungry. And before the taco truck runs out of chicken mole, let's go ahead and get into this week's case profile. All right. Captain Kidd is a glorified nerd who takes his love for the web, a game of Stratego, and a crazy fetish with geocaching and turns it into an enterprise acting as a middleman for criminals. He receives goods from criminal party A and then uses droppers to hide the goods in a secret location, at which point he then conducts a transaction between criminal party A, the seller, and criminal party B, the buyer. And when he have confirmation that party A has what party B wants and party B has paid the money, Captain Kidd gives over the geocache location to party B, and we're off and running to see what it is all about. So what do you think about this concept, Rory, a geocaching criminal?
I mean, if you look at it on its face, it's actually a pretty cool idea, because this way the buyer and seller never have to meet. They just have this middleman who says, okay, I'm going to put this here. When you pay me the money, I'm going to go to you and say, this is where it is. And you're going to say, okay, I got this. Okay, we're good. I'm going to go retrieve my package. And Bob's your uncle.
Now, I've done projects. You've done construction, right?
Yep.
You know, 50% down, 50% on completion. So correct. Is Captain Kidd getting 50% down and then they get 50% once they actually find the goods? Because what if I paid you 100% of the money, I get to the spot like a ROM, and the goods aren't there because these seekers ended up getting there first?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting, but I guess it's one of those things. Maybe you just don't want to cross that guy because, again, you're taking his money. You don't want to cross these blacklisters because he's got friends in high places, obviously. He had a splinter team. He called it a splinter team waiting to take that woman.
Plus, he has very much Red tendencies, right? Captain Kidd threw the bag over that guy's face and choked him out just because he messed up hiding the drugs in that house.
The kid didn't even flinch. He's like, he'll never do that again. Okay, bag over your head.
So can we talk about the misdirection of the opening of the episode? Because you hear Captain Kidd, and then here's this kid telling this creepy-ass ghost story as they're secretly lighting candles one by one, and they juxtapose the other kid who's got like the most amazing glow sticks I've ever seen. I totally need those for my next rave party. And they're going down the stairs. And so I think that it's like, it's two different stories is kind of how I was envisioning it. Were you having that same kind of feeling that it was two different things?
Yeah. I was trying to figure it out, because the kid who eventually winds up getting sick, he's poking the floor with the stick. So I'm saying to myself, okay, so he's in on it. Who are they trying to scare? And what is actually the point? Because they kind of made it seem like they were trying to scare the kid in the basement by sticking him down there. So I got kind of confused.
Yeah, I think that's where I was. And I was thinking that like, he was telling the story to this other kid, and they're actually like showing you the ghost story play out. So the two never had any connection with each other until all of a sudden, then you started hearing the clunk, the clunk. And then you're like, oh, okay, they're in the same house.
Right. It was almost like everybody tells the Cropsey stories when they go, you know, camping.
And then you get the pan down with the candle with the skull. And I'm like, okay, that's just something I take with my to my clubhouse as a kid. Oh, every
always,
single week.
Always. You don't? I take mine. I thought actually when he was tapping the floor because they showed the skull, I was waiting for like a body to fall out or something like that.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
I wasn't expecting a little dose of fentanyl.
I was waiting for all of them to actually fall through the floor themselves.
That would have been interesting.
Because, you know, those old Vicken houses, you know, they're not kept up so well. So everything just kind of crumbles and falls apart, which clearly happened as he was digging up in the ceiling boards.
Facts.
But at the same time, these kids, and you're thinking Captain Kidd, it's like, is this kid the Blacklister? Because most of the time we usually see the Blacklister in the cold open. And I'm like, what in the hell are these guys writing about this week?
It would have been an interesting twist, but we've already had, remember, it was the young girl that put the hit out on Liz. So we've already had a kid involved somehow. So it would have been interesting.
Oh, that's right. The dark web girl.
Yes.
Yes, that is true. That is true. I mean, she's more like a teenager. And, you know, these days, and 14 is the new
18.
She's
still not somebody you expect putting a hit out on somebody.
That's true. That's true.
Let alone an FBI agent.
But yeah, so I was really confused at the opening this week just because I was like, is it an actual kid? And that's what we're dealing with, is an actual kid that's going to kill people. But luckily it was not. It was just a setup to find the drugs that were hidden there for Captain Kidd and the guy who was coming to go pick them up.
Poor Bob.
Oh my gosh. And then it really centered around actually what was going down was a woman by the name of Sophia Maroon. So she is an LGBTQ plus champion and from Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. And she works her entire life to be this glorified, you know, human savior of people who are oppressed in their countries for their beliefs or their sexual orientations. And the people from Saudi Arabia are thinking that Saudi Arabia is getting a bad name, especially those connected to the royal family. So they're trying to capture and kidnap Sophia Maroon. And so they reach out to our good buddy, one Neville Townsend. So that way he can go ahead and actually kidnap Sophia and then use Captain Kidd as the transaction broker so that the royal family's hands stay clean of the entire operation.
Pulled from the news, maybe?
I mean, we're not typically a pulled from headline show, but it seems like that's been the case as of late.
It does seem that way. And it was interesting storyline. I liked it. I think there was more to the episode than the actual Blacklister because, I mean, we'll discuss it later, but it felt like the Blacklister almost went back to like season one, where it wasn't so much about the Blacklister, but where you could go with the Blacklister once you get your hands on them.
As in like how you could use them to your own accord. Like we've seen much of the season so far with Liz and how she's been using the Blacklisters for her own advantage.
Right. I mean, and that was ultimately the beginning of the show, was he's trying to find out who Berlin is and all these Blacklister tied together to form this. And I feel like that's where they kind of went with this, that the Blacklister wasn't so much important. It was what we could get from the Blacklister.
And see, this is where, I don't know if this really ties into anything. I thought this was just a good Blacklister story because you had to fill 44 minutes because really what it's doing in this episode is setting up what's going to happen next, which is, of course, Mr. Andrew Patterson, one a.k.a. Yep. Rakitin, and he is the one that's actually the hunt of Agent Park, who's tailing him over to Red's restaurant, and then he's all pissed off because he got tailed, and Red's not going to do anything about it, and then that leads us to Rakitin actually meeting with our friend in the East and having a conversation about what do they need to do next about the FBI and Director Harold Cooper, which I'm sure means that we're going to see a Rakitin episode, if not next week, sometime in the future.
For sure. For sure. I agreed with Red in this episode. You know, this guy is not very smart for somebody who's supposed to be, you know, high in the government, concealing what he's actually doing for the government, with the fact that he's right by Red's restaurant. You know you're being tailed. Why do you make it look like I got something to hide?
Right.
Because during the episode, when they talk about it, Cooper's like, yeah, okay, so the other three guys were normal. Okay, this guy, okay, we'll just tail him again tomorrow. No, this is the one guy who showed you he's got something to hide.
Yeah, when you run away and all of a sudden you disappear out of nowhere, it basically puts a big target on your back.
Hello.
It's also, it goes to, you know, when you think about standard operating procedures, the friend in the East says that we have these protocols in place We have a process, and you're part of that process. So when you feel like you can think outside the box, that's when the process breaks down. And that means Rakuten, my guess, is probably not long for this world.
Not on this show. Definitely not on this show.
Question is, who kills him first? The friend from the East, or does Rennington get to him first?
I'd like to see Red do it, because Red likes to get his hands dirty. Kind of haven't seen that in a little bit, because he might be sick. He might not be sick. We don't know what's going on with that either.
I mean, he already wanted to lobotomize him and shove a feeding tube down his throat. So he's already got a little bit of one up there.
And that was a great part, because we haven't seen that angry Red for a little while.
Yeah, like the old classic, you know, pour vodka on you and then like the cigar. Yeah.
Yep.
Or take out an entire prison with a shotgun.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, bad Red is always the fun Red, and it's always been challenging because he has this injury. So you're trying to just, when is he going to get angry again and be an angry Red? That's the kind of Red we like to see sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is that usually, you know, a character of Red's stature, he's not the guy who gets his hands dirty. He's the guy who tells other people. This Red, he wants to get his hands dirty.
So overall, where we are in the season, we are, was this 11 episodes in at this point? Did you feel like this was a great episode, a good episode?
I thought it was a good episode. Great is hard. Great's hard to achieve. I want to say it was a good episode. It had some good nuggets in there, if you were paying attention. So we always talk about filler, fluff episodes that don't move the storyline, you know, forward. I don't know if this moved the storyline forward. I think it was another setup jumping point for what's to come. But there were some good things in there.
Yeah, I would agree with you. This was clearly a tentpole kind of stake in the ground, like, you know, turn the direction, right? It was truly a setup for Rakuten for next week, would be the way I interpreted this episode. There wasn't any tie to Liz. There wasn't any tie to mythology. There wasn't any cool poems or undermining statements that you could like read into to get some good theorization going. It was just a classic bad guy with a classic bad guy story. And, you know, how does Rakuten fit into the picture?
Yeah, I do think that this episode is going to be the setup for Liz coming back. Because if Cooper's going to be in danger, Liz is coming back.
And I think this is where I have challenge with this season, is like where season one was great was because whatever we were doing in that particular episode, Courier, Alchemist, the Kingmaker, whatever, even the Kings of the Highway in season three, there was always a purpose that drove the mythology. And in this case, if Rakuten is the focus and Rakuten's going to be the episode next week, then why didn't Rakuten use Captain Kidd, especially if Neville Townsend already was in touch with Captain Kidd, right? So there could have been like a tie between Townsend and the friend in the East, but because they're not supposed to meet each other because they're two different factions that are going after the same person in Katarina Rostova / Red Reddington, etc.
Whoever.
I think that would have been cool, because then you have these two factions coming together, but not coming together because you got this intermediary in the middle. By just having this Saudi Arabia piece to it, it's like, it's just a throwaway. So I thought that was, you know.
No, it is. I mean, because you look at it too. I mean, you're supposed to believe that Neville Townsend is this big, larger than life, even though we see him in a chair, he could barely move. Next thing you know, he's beating up Rudiger, and you know, now he's out in the field again. But you see him, and then you see our friend in the East. Well, who wants Red dead? Well, now Townsend does, because of what Liz told him, whether it's true or not. Wouldn't the friend in the East want to protect him from Townsend? So wouldn't you have a war with those two factions going on, with Red and Liz in the middle of it?
And that's exactly why it would have been cool if Rakuten would have been the buyer on the other side of Townsend's transaction, because then you're buying from the enemy and not realizing that you're even buying from the enemy.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely would have been cool just to connect the two worlds together without knowing that they're connecting each other.
Now, Captain Kidd himself, though, I mean, how do you just leave yourself out in the open to get busted by the FBI?
And how many people know where you are?
Well, I mean, how many people do you have working for him? It's like
you got this whole thing and they gave you up in a second.
I got seven people working on my team, you know, for my day job. And it's like, why they're all in their own houses. Why do we all have to be working in the same warehouse and kill the whole operation? If I go down, at least there's six more people that can keep the operation going.
fact. And don't you want to keep yourself hidden? You do all of this stuff for your clients for secrecy and all these purposes, but yet you're just hanging out with your little earpiece in, walking around with your employees.
Moral of the story is don't go back to the workplace because you're all busted if the FBI shows up.
Or how about don't tell your low-level employees where they can find you at any given moment?
Oh, right. Because they told... like, why would you say, like, hey, you can go find me here?
Everybody's going to save their own hide. You know where he is? Oh, sure. He's in this warehouse.
Overall, what do you say on a scale of 1 to 10? What would you rate this episode?
1 to 10, I'm going to give it a... I'm going to say 6.
Okay. Solid.
Yeah. Solid. So, I mean, it's not middle of the road, but as always, you always want to move the story and the mythology. So when it's not there, it kind of takes a couple of notches off of it.
Yeah. I would say, from a concept perspective, I would say 8. From an acting perspective, I was a little bit, so maybe like a 4 or 5. So yeah, I think a 6, 6.5 sounds about right when you average it out.
I agree.
Yeah. Not one of the best ones, not one of the worst ones by any stretch of the imagination.
But you know what? We talked about this once before, was that if you wanted to go the route of, let's say, Walking Dead. Now, again, the pandemic kind of pushed everything aside. But if you wanted to go the route of Walking Dead and only have 16 episodes, take out those 6 that you don't really need, that don't move the story. Do you think people would complain that we got to wait so long in between to get episodes? Like, where's the happy medium?
And we actually, up on Reddit, there was a really great post. They took the IMDb ratings for each episode and they kind of charted it out in a cross tab. So seasons across the top, episode numbers down the left. And then they put in the actual fan ratings into that grid. And what you clearly saw, because they did it like in a heat map style, right? Green, obviously, being like a 9 or better. And then you get down to like a 5, because there was a 5. And then that was like red. When you look at it from that heat map perspective, what you find out is that there are like 10 to 13 really highly rated episodes each season, which just goes to show that 22 episodes, NBC, CBS, Fox, whoever, like
there's a lot.
There's no need for it anymore. Just tell a good story and give all the pilots that you don't greenlight the ability to be greenlit, because you still need to fill the entire schedule with 26 episodes for the season.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, even when they had pushed off that we didn't get the season until January, like people were upset that we had to wait, but people liked the idea that we ran straight through. There were no breaks, you know, so 16 episodes could work, but I can never get enough of Blacklist. Even if it's a, middle of the road episode, I still love watching it.
Now, what was interesting when we're looking at these ratings, do you know what the worst episode ever was?
God, there's so many, but no, I wouldn't even take a shot. I wouldn't even know.
Number 1, Elizabeth Keen. Lowest scored episode ever.
Really?
Yes.
That's surprising.
Do you know what the number 1 best episode all time was?
Number 1. Wow, I would go back. I mean, for me, I would go back to either season 1 or season 3.
But which episode? You have to pick an episode. What is the best episode of The Blacklist?
Oh, God, there's so many. I mean, I love the Stewmaker episode, all of season 1. I can't guess. I can't narrow it down.
Well, the fans have agreed on IMDb, and the most top-rated episode of all time, Dead Tom.
Don't tell me Tom. Oh, I was going to say Tom Keen. I was like, don't tell me Tom.
Dead Tom. Ian Garvey.
That's for you, Aaron.
Ian Garvey, episode season 5, episode 8. Ian Garvey, best episode of all time.
Except that he lived. He's still on the show, even though he's dead.
No, he is not. He's not. He's in the morgue with the toe tag. He's gone.
We had to have that flashback scene of him proposing with her with blonde hair. Like, we needed. Come on, keep Tom out of here.
So, it was really interesting to look at the breakdown and just go. What was really surprising was actually the best kind of run of episodes was actually the end of season 6.
Maybe it's because we're getting more into the story at that point. Because to me, I mean, I loved season 1. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy every season, even the episodes that don't move the needle. But season one, when it all tied together, when Liz is sitting there with all the Blacklister cases on the floor and she finally puts together how they're all connected. Like, to me, that was just amazing. It just tied the whole season together.
Yeah, because I was like, I'm looking at it going, wait, the end of season six was the president and the conspiracy against the United States. And I'm like, and I remembered it was like, wait, that's what we were fighting for. But when you think right. about it, it's like, you only think of like, well, now that I have the answer, I think about like that run of episodes in season six wasn't like that great because the payoff wasn't good. But really, no, when you think about not. It up until the payoff, it was actually really intense. The whole Anne McMahon and Diaz and everybody then what they were doing. I was like, well, I could see why that would work, right? Because if you're invested in the story to see what's going to happen, the problem is that what happened fizzled. That was the issue.
Yeah. Well, you also had the whole Agnes thing. You had Alexander Kirk in there.
Which these confirmed that start of season four was one of the weaker runs of the show. So at least the people that were like, yeah, this isn't, you know, jiving, whatever. Because then Kaplan comes on the scene in the end of season four. Again, another right. great streak of green for the whole yes. Kaplan sequence.
Yeah, and people bought in at that point. You know, it wasn't as crazy because you started having the I hate you, I love you, which people couldn't stand that she was so wishy-washy on Red. So that's why it confuses me, because now they're looking at it and saying, well, now I don't like it because she's against Red. Well, you didn't like it when she was wishy-washy. You don't like it when she's again, what? They have to be together. I like it when they're like this. I personally like it this way. I have a gut feeling on what's going to happen, but we'll get into that when we go to characters.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and do so. And first we talk about music as we do always. Our first track this week, Our Darkness by Anne Clark, plays as the Byers and the task force search for Sophia, which, by the way, call back to season one. At least this time she was in a box versus a fridge. But again, an oldie but a goodie, bringing you back, being buried underground.
Yes.
Then we have as Cooper talking to Aram and telling him the stories of the Saudi royal family and why the criminals were let go. We hear the song Chains by Avik Kaplan, of all people.
Mm. Well, you know, it was cool though when that song was playing and Aram walks out of his office and they pan the camera to her.
You can actually see the chain, right?
You see the chain. That was so cool.
I was like, was that intentional? Like, is that why the song is here? Like, I don't like, is that always been there when they walk out of Cooper's office?
I'm going to give them credit even if they didn't mean it that way.
Yeah. It was a cool thing. I saw that on the second watch.
It worked.
It was good. Anyway, you can hear all of these songs plus all of the songs from 8 seasons of The Blacklist over on Spotify and Apple Music. We have links to both playlists over on the website, theblacklistexposed.com.
Yes, sir.
With that, Park this week, just pretty much chasing down Rikitin. Do you think that she added much this week?
She was wallpaper. Okay. She was wallpaper. We got to see her for like 15 seconds. I mean, I think she's going to come more prominent because don't forget, she owes Red a favor. So I think this was a setup for she's going to have to do Red a favor, something to do with Rikitin.
Very possible. And I think but the one nice thing, though, is that and it's a challenge, right? Because you have the one female actress in the war room pulling it away so all the males can go do their stuff. So I'm still kind of bitter about that we don't have any more females back in the war room. But
yeah.
what her doing this allows is for other characters then to shine, because since she's not available, Aram obviously gets to go out into the field with Wrestler.
That's kind of the reason why I like Liz not being there. I mean, like I said, well, I'll talk about Liz because I want to talk about Liz, even though she wasn't here. But I think that this is a nice setup because it creates more screen time for the other characters on the show. So it's not just about Red. We're seeing Wrestler being a cop again. You're getting Aram, like you said, going out into the field. So we're starting to see more focus on other characters because, you know, Liz eats into a bit of screen time. And if she's not going to be on screen with Red, then you have to have Red screen time and Liz screen time, which doesn't leave a lot for everybody else.
But even though you get more screen time for Wrestler this week, he just really spends a lot of time sitting and holding, interrogating witnesses, helping them get to Captain Kidd. And then he goes and actually finds Kidd dead after Neville has his way with him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he showed off his cop skills. We got to see him doing his interrogation. you know, and then, you know, he makes the comment about, well, isn't that what we do as far as we catch the criminal and then we use him to get to the next guy? Like, that's what we do. But if you go back with the hospital scene is where Cooper got called out. So I think from there, I think that was a setup to where we've been now, because I think he's tussling with what's going back and forth.
Yeah. And you look at Donald early seasons and how he's very much the Boy Scout. And it's like, why are we going to let this guy walk? And now you have Donald saying, well, isn't that what we do? We use this guy to get the next guy. And Harold has a kind of a crisis conscience moment there in front of Wrestler to say, yeah, I'm kind of tired of that. Like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, and you have to be, you know, at a certain point, but you know, it's so funny to see where wrestlers become, you know, we knew he was, you know, the Boy Scout, you know, and then he's got some shady things that he did going on, and, you know, and you go forward and now he's being a cop again. But the reality is that he knows, like, look at all the things we've had to let go or look the other way, especially when it comes to Red. How am I really making a difference?
But I do like that, like you said, other people get more screen time because Aram was the benefactor this week, right? He's a Mochaccino fan. Plus, we find out that he was a circus freak.
So good.
I mean,
so good.
I mean, I know it was Amir's birthday this week, so it was kind of nice to see a nice Aram episode for Amir's birthday week. But most importantly, kudos, Aram, on the trapeze artist, I have to say.
Hey, anytime you can land somebody flexible.
Right. Deducing blood clues. I thought that was kind of neat, the whole Nora sequence, and then he realizes that it's the password for the security valence.
Yep.
I don't understand how pushing the microphone button on the security turns on the camera. Like, usually wouldn't it be a camera icon instead of the microphone icon?
Yeah, you would think. But it did have a zoom button. I did see a zoom button.
Zoom in. Enhance.
Enhance. Enhance.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, it's a gray Escalade, no plates, and you're just like, they're really going to find in Washington, D.C., the one gray Escalade with no plates.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, a little TV convenience going on there, but I like the concept.
Yes, for sure. But Aram had the shortest circus career in history.
Yeah.
Ran away from, like, he went there Monday, lost his virginity Tuesday, lost his girl to the strong man on Wednesday, and then he's watching Jerry Maguire on Thursday. So good. So good.
Hey, Ron, circus is effing
closed. I literally cracked up. Oh, so good. But then you see him, like, you know, thinking outside the box. I mean, because when he did, you know, the drug deals online, he did that on his own.
Totally, 100%.
Nobody knew that he was going to do that. So he went to be an agent again instead of being, you know, major tech dude.
Although it was kind of funny when he's like, hey, by the way, I got the stash. He pulls it out of his bag. I was like, how much drugs did you buy?
It's like, we were looking for you. Where were you? Oh, I was just buying some ecstasy, some heroin, you know.
I mean, it's like you could get away with a line or two, but like you had to buy a whole rock. Like, come on. Are you trying to make it believable or something?
Right. And then, you know, and then what are you going to do? So you're going to go to the drop, and who do you bring? Wrestler with you. The one guy who looks like a cop.
Right.
I mean, Rom's going to show up on his bicycle with his helmet. Like, okay, this guy's not a cop. But you bring Wrestler in his suit, his standard issued FBI suit. Come on.
Can we also talk about the very poor marketing skills of the DC Metro cab companies? When they looked over at first, I was like, well, it's highly suspicious that there are three yellow unmarked cars. Like,
yeah, there was literally nothing on there that marked them as a taxi. And if they were going to be, like, you know, an unmarked taxi, then they wouldn't have been yellow.
Well, if we're talking about, like, diversity and inclusion and LGBTQ. It's like there are other taxis that are not yellow. Let's include all taxis here, Wrestler. Come on.
Right. You could have just pulled the ATM camera from across the street. It didn't have to be off the, you know, the yellow, plain, brand new, shiny cabs that were out there.
It's good stuff. So this is the part that, like, I mean, I know it works for the story because they were at the park, the drugs were gone, and then we find out that it was the Seeker, right? These guys who are trying to steal Captain Kidd's stuff for themselves, not realizing that they could actually get killed because there's a really criminal on the other side of that transaction who's not getting their stuff. right? So I get the concept that they use the Seekers in order to find Captain Kidd. But at the same time, like, I felt like the Seekers were kind of a waste. Like, there could have been more like a competition sequence that you could have done with this, where if Captain Kidd's like, I have the thing, and if you guys want it, then like all the criminals become Seekers, and then the first person to find it then pays the seller or something. Make it more like Mad World, if you will, or Rat Race.
Yeah, I originally thought that the Seekers were probably some people that actually worked for him at some point.
Because that's what it seemed like, right? Because he's come into the drop and he throws the coffee the cup off. Away. Yeah.
Yeah, it just seemed like they worked for him at some point. They were tired of not making the money that he was making and said, you know what? We know where all his stuff is. We know how he operates. We just rob from him.
Yeah. No, a little Robin Hood for drugs.
Yeah, that seemed like what it was.
So maybe a little bit of a waste on the Seeker concept, but it definitely drove the story forward and helped them obviously get to where they needed to find then the people that are working at the drug evidence locker who apparently know exactly where Captain Kidd does his operation.
Right. Everybody knows every little nuance of detail, which that's the only thing I didn't like, because you're supposed to go with the route that not every person knows everything so that nobody knows everything.
Exactly. But someone that knows a lot of things is director Harold Cooper, and he sure as hell ain't happy about cutting another deal with yet another criminal. But I think he's even more upset because Main Justice basically tells him it's just the way the world works, man. The U.S. wants its oil. It likes the royal family. You got to let these people go. It's more important than the case.
Exactly. Another one just ripped from the headlines, because, you know, it's one of those things that we only see what they want us to see. We don't know the reality of all these back channels and every other, you know, diplomatic, you know, thing that they use. And if they're, you know, look, they say they don't trade prisoners. We don't know that for a fact. You know, if we could get somebody back by giving them somebody they want, why wouldn't we do that? You know, in the sense, but it was just one of those things. I think it was just a setup to Cooper's frustration. Cause like I said, if you go back to the original, when Liz had the bomb in the hospital, and he meets up with the, was it the DEA agent?
Yeah, the AT, arms and tobacco person.
Yeah, the ATF guy.
Yeah.
And he gives him, you know, the thing like, well, you know, I don't know how you sleep at night because I wouldn't compromise my principles, essentially. And that's where I think it started Cooper's flow in the back of his head. Like, wait a minute, I'm sitting here working with Red Reddington, who supposedly did all this stuff, whether it's hearsay or not, but I'm working with this guy and I'm looking the other way for everything that he does. And ultimately Red's killing all these people and everything else. And Cooper's like, well, the ultimate goal is we got the blacklister. So I think he's having a conscience crisis right now.
Especially because he's saying to Red, you know, we're not going to do this anymore. And Red's like, no, no, no. Trust me, Cooper. Like, you don't want to do that because you're going to end up dead. I can't tell you that because that would give away my secret that I'm N13 and have all this information, even though you already know I'm N13 because I have all this information. And it's a weird dynamic between the two of them right now. And we'll get into Dembe in a bit, but I think that they need to figure out a way to work together for Liz's benefit, because Liz right now is in more danger than ever. The more these two bicker.
Yeah, and that was why I kind of didn't like the line where, you know, he says, like, it's time for us to pick a side and we'll be on Liz's side. Like, if you're, like, I get it. You worked with her, but look at what she's done. It's not like she's been, you know, a Girl Scout this whole time. She's done things behind Cooper's back, behind the team's back. She's done all these things. What makes her essentially better than Red that you would say, well, it's Liz. We give her the benefit of the doubt. Look at what she just did. Liz breaks out the freelancer and has him set up these planes to collide. Like, and does she assume that they're going to get there in time to stop it? What if they didn't? All those people would have been killed. So it's not exactly like Liz is on the up and up right now.
Agree. Well, Red, like we said, he's getting a little bit more aggressive with Rakiten. Finally, he won't shut the hell up, and he pleads with Cooper to let him handle things, and then gets yet another spiritual lesson from Dembe. And has probably the best line of the episode. And I thought the pills were bad.
I love it when they finally give Dembe. He's the voice of reason. He's the voice of conscience. You know, when he comes into it, it's, you know, you love seeing aggressive Red. And I think Red at that point realized, wait a minute, I'm Red Reddington. Who do you think you're talking to like that? And he finally just clicked and said, wait a minute, I got to put this guy in his place for a second. And he knows I think he went there, and when Red and Cooper had that meeting, I really do believe that Red was being heartfelt and honest with him
100%.
In that moment.
100%.
Where he said to him, I'm not a traitor to this country. I would never divulge secrets. I'm asking you as a friend, don't do this. Because he knows what's going to happen, and obviously we do too now at the end of the episode, is now finally, oh, well, Red, you're not going to do anything? I'm going to do it. And now Cooper's on the hit list. That's what Red didn't want. He's got powerful people that work for him. And if you're going to be the person that gets in the middle of them making money, doing business as usual, you got to go. They don't care. They'll even think twice about killing somebody on the show.
So let's break that down a little bit. I would never betray this country. I would never sell this country's secrets. We've always heard Red say, not my country, not my government. What did you take away from this exchange? Are you thinking in the back of your head, like, oh, crap, maybe he is like CIA deep undercover?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because at this point now, you kind of have to look at the minutia like that because words are important and they write it that way specifically for a reason. He didn't say I would never betray your country. You know what I mean? So I, you know, it's so hard. I don't, regardless of what the friend from the East said, I do not believe that Red is N13. I am kind of like you were saying that he's got some kind of secret agenda that has been a 30-year project. Whatever this was, however he was installed into this, whatever it was, I think that he is American. Let's just go that way. I think he is an American.
So what you're saying is that N13, where Keaton and the friend from the East assume that Red is N13. So when he says a fact that no one knows is true, that's his fact, his story, his belief, but yes. Red still might not be N13, really.
Right, which could ultimately be that, you know, again, it's pure speculation, but you want to say, okay, so Red was on this mission working for the government 30 years ago, infiltrated himself into this network, you know, into this Russian network, because the guy said, I know him, I trust him like a brother. Why does everybody trust Red like a brother when he's a criminal that kills people that need to go? Because Ilya, you had the same thing with Ilya, known him since he was a kid. You know, they had the whole fire truck moment. Where does this come from? How could he be connected to both of them but be an American? That's the interesting part.
And be involved with Dom at the same time.
Yes. So where did this all come from? How did he get mixed up, you know, with Dom, with Katerina? Was that intentional? Was he supposed to? I don't think that he, I mean, look, people are going to say, well, he's OG Raymond Reddington. That's why this is the way that it is. Even though they said he's not, or supposedly said he's not, this would make the most sense if you break the story down this way to say he is OG Raymond Reddington. He came back with a vengeance to get revenge.
No, see, I totally disagree there.
I disagree with it as well. I'm just saying, but it fits the narrative.
If he is deep cover, CIA, FBI, isn't it good to be home, sir? All that stuff from the pilot, the Tacoma house blowing up, and people are like, well, maybe he raised his family there because he is somebody different. Then it leads me to believe that in this case, if he truly is a deep cover CIA undercover that infiltrated this friend from the East's network and has been working in Russia this entire time, then it can't be OG Raymond Reddington, because OG Raymond Reddington was killed because we know about Katerina and the cabal, they were going to frame him and the bones, and there's just too much there to say in order for Katerina's story to be true and play out, like he has to be dead for Katerina to say like it was, you know, Hobson's choice and all that fun stuff. And, you know, she wanted to kill herself after the fact. And even though she ended up not killing herself. So like OG Raymond Reddington is 100% dead in my mind.
Yes. So. I agree with that. You know, it's just one of those things that you're trying to understand how this could be and where this can be. And how is it that Red literally knows everybody on both sides, you know, of everything, of every situation. He knows everybody, all the players on both sides. He's with Fitch of the cabal. He's on the other side with the Russians. Like, where does he fit in? And if you go with the whole narrative, you know, of Katarina, that somebody became Raymond Reddington just to access the money to fund Katarina and Ilya and all that, I'm having a hard time seeing that all fit together somehow. But somehow it's got to make sense in the end.
So we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out, as we always do.
Always.
So with that being said, Dembe then, he says, Liz has aligned herself with a great enemy. As long as you and Cooper fight, the bad guys will continue to win. You wanted Kid, and instead you got nothing. Fact. Pretty strong medicine indeed.
Fact. I mean, you know, you can't argue with his logic. He was the voice of reason, and he's been there. And, you know, I think it's become more prevalent now. He used to drop a little nugget here or there. Now it seems like he's becoming more comfortable voicing opposition to Red, and knowing that it's not like if anybody else said that to Red, they probably wouldn't still be on the show anymore. But because it's Dembe, he realizes that he's right, because at the end, Red and Cooper are fighting, and Townsend walked away, killed Kid, and neither of them got any information whatsoever. And that was the part that confused me, was because if Townsend is this powerful enemy, as they're making it seem that he is, and he has all these allies and everything else, how come Red doesn't know anything about him? If he's so connected to the underworld and everything else, why does it seem like he doesn't know enough information about Townsend at all?
Or he knows enough about Townsend, he just hasn't shown his cards yet.
True. It just seemed like when Dembe had said to him, you didn't get Kid to find out more about Townsend, was like he didn't really know that much.
I think he was,
and again, not even a word about the archives.
I think
so did the archives really the matter?
Yeah, I don't think it's the archive issue, because the archive is tied to the Eastern Friend. I think the reason why he said that you didn't have anything from Townsend is because he wanted information on Townsend to get to Liz. I think he knows enough about Townsend, he just doesn't know how to find him. So he wants Kid in order to be able to find Townsend so he could find Liz specifically.
Right. And then ultimately his own end goal is to kill the person that killed his family, but he also wants the archives.
But he has the Townsend wants the archive.
Townsend wants the archives.
Because he thinks that there's information in there that'll be about his family and what happened to him.
Yeah, like Fulcrum 2.0.
It all comes around, right? Buried in a box underground. Just wasn't cold enough.
Right. I know we're moving past, and we've pretty much covered everybody in the episode, but I kind of wanted to talk about Liz's absence from the show.
Sure.
Because I haven't gotten a chance. There was a moment between Liz and Essie Jackson where they're talking, and it seemed like it clicked for Liz when she was like, now I know how Red stayed ahead, one step ahead. And I think she realized, that's why I think her disappearance was planned. I think this was all planned, because she needed to disappear to set up her network, her shadow network, the same way Red has one. Remember, she set up safe houses for criminals. She's kind of making her own stable. We talked about it that time with the psychologist, where it seemed like she was like, okay, well, now you owe me. Like, she would reel her in. Like, she's creating her own stable, because that's the only way she's going to beat Red, is she has to stay one step ahead of not only Red, but the task force. So now she's aligned herself with Townsend. Whether she knows how bad that could be for her, she doesn't care. She's so focused. She's got blinders on. I want to kill Red. That's it. She's not seeing the big picture.
Yeah, she's all enemy of the enemy is my friend.
Right, which works to a certain extent until the enemy of your friend no longer has use for you anymore.
Right,
totally. Yeah, they have no use for you.
I don't know.
So I think she's setting up her network to take Red down from behind the scenes. I think that's the only way. I don't see any other reason. I know everybody likes to speculate and contract and this and that. I don't think it has anything to do with anything. I think she truly loves the show. They talk about how they're a family all the time. I don't think this would be it where she'd be missing for 6, 7, 8 episodes.
No,
I think this was set up.
Story-driven decision, 100%.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, then we finish up the episode with the Eastern Friend, and Rikitan says that these are his wishes. Does the Eastern Friend report to someone that's even more threatening?
Is he the top of the food chain?
That's the question.
Is anybody ever the top of the food chain? It seems like the food chain never ends.
T-Rex.
There's always somebody.
T-Rex is the top of the food chain.
Except when he has to reach something with his short arms. But yeah, I mean, he seems like such a stoic character that he's got to be, you got to believe that he's the top. He's the guy because he's making decisions. He's not saying like, he's not handing them that envelope saying this is what they want us to do or this is what I was told to do.
But that's what he says in this scene. He says, these are his wishes. So it's like, who is the his?
I think it's him. These are my wishes. These are his wishes right here. I don't know. It's so up in the air, but it's such a, like, there's so much potential in that story. You know, where are we going with this? Why, like you said, if it was a matter of eliminate Harold Cooper, you wouldn't need to have a paper with like 8 bullet points on it. You'd open the paper and it would say, kill Harold Cooper. Like, that's it. You wouldn't need more.
Right. With the, all the letters cut out of a magazine.
So it's just funny because where does that go now? Because now do we have to protect Cooper?
And who protects Cooper? Does Red protect Cooper? Does Red give away the fact that he's working with the FBI and then he has to, now he's at war with the Eastern Friend? Or does he hope that he can do enough to put somebody in the path of Cooper without him having to be involved?
Right, because the way they made it seem, or at least from the dialogue, was that the friend from the East has no idea that Red has the FBI in his pocket.
That's what it sure seems like.
Yeah, because he was like, they're following him too.
Except that they had that weird conversation of, you know, unable to, or no, what's the other word that he said?
Unwilling or unable.
Or, yeah, unable.
And then he said, no, he's unable.
Yeah, so I think they're putting two and two together that Red may be in a pocket somewhere.
Well, because even Ratikan said with it, he's an assistant director of the FBI. Like, even he's like almost making it sound like those are guys that are off limits. Like, we can't do that.
Which makes you then wonder, like, well, what is this secret agency anyway? Like,
right. Do you look at it and say he's unable because he's closely aligned with him, or he's unable because he doesn't want to kill an assistant director of the FBI?
Because he doesn't want to kill the assistant director of the FBI because he'd go to jail or get killed himself. Or is it because, like, hey, that's not part of the rules of the game? Maybe this is a bigger game.
I mean, it's an ever-expanding world. Because remember, we go back to the map where he shows Liz that map. And you just had multiple Cabal colors here, this group here. Yeah, you had groups everywhere. So which group are we fighting now? Or are they all under control of, like, one umbrella corporation?
Isn't that usually how it all is? GE owns everything?
Usually it's, yeah. It's all connected somehow.
Now it's Google, Apple, and Facebook, right? And Amazon. They own everything.
All right. Well, if they don't own it, Jeff Bezos does.
Well, that'll do it for this week's discussion. Overall, pretty decent episode. We know that it's more of a setup for next week, and hopefully we get some more exciting things as we move into April 2nd's episode before another 1 week break.
For sure. I definitely think this didn't move the story, but it set you up for the future stories going forward. Liz is coming back because she's going to have to save Cooper. I think it's all coming together now. Want to take a quick second to say thank you to those of you that are supporting the show by going to Patreon. That's Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Special big thanks to our honorary blacklister, Patricia. Also, a special shout out to our task force members, Judy, Sharon, Karen, Bobby Jens, and now Mary, all official task force members. All of those people receive cool gifts from us, and you can get a cool gift as well for donating at the $20 level or higher. You know you want a cool t-shirt or a coffee mug. Come on, you know you do. You don't have to stay at the $20 level forever, just a few months to get the cool gifts.
And then you get to look like Rory, because Rory is also a $20 member, and he got a cool t-shirt.
I did.
He's even sporting it now as we record this podcast. But more importantly, you get access to the podcast before anybody else if you join up at the $5 level over at Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. $5 in your hat gets you the podcast, the interviews, anything we release before anybody else right after the show ends. So fill the fedora, get some awesome rewards for yourself, and stay tuned. We got all of your thoughts and theories coming up right after this.
What if you could live your life without limits, where every desire you ever imagined could be fulfilled? Experience Westworld, a show where every human's dark side will be revealed. After watching each episode, listen to Beyond Westworld, a podcast featuring humans and hosts from around the park diving deep into HBO's illustrative narrative. Every hero has a code, and so do you. Download your itinerary and the show at beyondwestworldpodcast.com or your podcast app of choice.
Hey, this is Amir. I play Aram on The Blacklist, and you are listening to The Blacklist Exposed.
Now time for Special Agent Intel. On YouTube, Shelley said, maybe Elizabeth is not calling the shots. Townsend is.
Oh, maybe like she originally had started to think that she was going to work with Townsend. And because this episode didn't tie into Liz specifically, that maybe Townsend has actually got her under lock and key. And we found out that Red's going to have to rescue her.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a good point, too, because you think about it, like Liz thinks that she's calling the shots and she's in control, but she doesn't really know who Townsend is, you know, and if Red's thinking that he's that kind of guy, I don't think Liz is knowing what Townsend is really up to.
It's a good thought. We'll have to see how it plays out. Old school CSCI over on Reddit shared this note of appreciation for Ashley Pinn, who plays the stunt double for Liz, a.k.a. Megan. She noticed yesterday that Ashley, Ms. Boone's stunt double, posted a thank you on her Instagram 2 days ago, which drew an immediate thank you back from Megan Boone directly. Ms. Pinn has a very cool stunt reel over on YouTube, which includes many scenes from The Blacklist. It's worth a look simply for the recognition of how many Liz Keen action scenes in the show are actually shots of Ashley versus Megan. Also, a very interesting little interview in backstage that describes how she was hired on the spot on the set of The Blacklist because of how much like Megan Boone she looked. For all of the grief that we give the writers about the Liz character, it's nice to see a good story for once about one of the unsung members of the crew who is an unwitting beneficiary. All of those years of Liz getting into crashes and bopped on the head have meant lots of work for the obviously talented Ms. Pinn. So thank you, Ashley, for all you do.
Yes, definitely. I wonder if she's the same one that played the double. Remember when she was like going into the office and then she walked out the back door? Oh, I wonder if she played that one too.
For the Cyranoid?
No. Even going back even further, it was like she went to like counseling when she walked in the front door. The stunt double was there, not stunt double, but her double lookalike was there so she could walk out the back door.
Oh, very possible. Yeah. I know the Cyranoid was not Ashley Pinn, right? It was somebody else.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. Also on Reddit, Nobody Cares Dude had this to say. Writers should give Elizabeth at least 50 IQ points more. I swear. I never disliked the character so much since Elena and Davina from the originals show. I want to point out I'm talking about the fictional character, not the actress. Thank you for pointing that out. What angers me is that Elizabeth can be smart. Why does she keep acting like a dumb one? Her hitting her head could have been a good way to make her become a genius. As much as sci-fi as it may seem, I swear I've read some articles about this. She's an FBI profiler, yet she doesn't understand people at all. Always getting manipulated left and right, thinking she's always right when she's always wrong, and she blames Red for her stupidity. Season 3 Elizabeth was at her worst. I didn't care about her going back to Tom, but she was childish. I loved her in seasons 1, 2, and 4, but damn, after she irreversibly started going downhill. I mean, the plan on which she tricked Red and Martin was good, and that proves she could be cunning, but once every 3 or 4 seasons. And I'm not even sure it was her plan either.
Fair statements.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I agree with it so much in its totality, but got to give her credit. She's working with what she's written. The character was written that way. Agreed. We didn't like season 3, Love You, Hate You, Liz either, but I wouldn't say she's dumb. You got to remember, here's somebody who is a trusting person. Didn't even know she had Tom in her life that was actually watching her back. She's been spied on her whole life. Red comes into the scene, flips her whole world upside down, where she's a trusting person. Now she can't trust anybody.
But then she has to stay that way and not trusting anybody instead of flipping back and forth.
Right. I mean, you know, I think that she's gone back and forth multiple times again, which people don't like about the way the character is written. But I think it all led to this point now where she's snapped and is going to use everything he's ever taught her against him.
It's fair. It's fair. All right, one more from Reddit. Chance Vance said, what do you consider the peak period of The Blacklist to be? So I'm catching up on the new season on Netflix, and I'm up to episode 5. Honestly, I've just stopped caring for all the mysteries without answers, and I'm only watching to see how it all eventually ends. Liz is a complete sociopath, and every character has become a moron. Anyway, what do you think the high point of the show was? When did the show peak in quality, and what do you think started its decline? For me, I'd have to say season 3. Liz on the Run was a thrilling storyline, and every character had their part to play. Red calling upon all his resources to protect her, Tom's mission and putting aside his differences, teaming up with Wrestler, Mr. Solomon was a great villain, best period of the whole show, and the director remains my favorite episode in part due to the climactic showdown at the cabin. When did it start declining? Oh, I reckon once Ryan Eggold left the show. It all began to go downhill from there.
Nope. Nope. I'm going to be the voice of Aaron on this one. Nope. Nope. I think the show got better once Tom was gone.
I will tell you my exact answer to this question. I am 100% in full agreement that season 6, Death Row, eating soup, cabbage, whatever it was, and they're sitting there and they're just talking, and you're like, this is the last time I'm ever going to see Raymond Reddington. In that moment, you have to give the answer at that moment. And at that moment, the answer drives what could come next. It doesn't end the show. It opens up a whole new set of stories and possibilities for what could be the ramifications of knowing that information. That's where the show took a spin. The minute she said, I love you, you're just like, I agree with the previous commenter. Like, dumb Liz. Like, why? Yeah. After all this time, are you going to just be like, it doesn't matter. I love you. Whatever. I'm like, no, 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 no.
Like, well, it comes down to the ultimate question is, do you think, because I know it's been said by, I believe, the Johns, that knowing the Raymond Reddington's identity would essentially end the show. But from a fan's perspective, as we are of it, do you believe that would end the show?
I believe wholeheartedly it ends the mythology that was originally the point of the show, which was, what is the relationship between Raymond Reddington and Elizabeth Keene? That relation, right. I'm sorry, Red Reddington, because I can't break my own rules. Raymond Reddington is her dad. Red Reddington is the guy who's hooking up with her now. And not hooking up in that way.
No. Don't feed that beast.
But Red and Elizabeth, what is their relationship? You can answer that question and still keep the show going, in my opinion. I think there's lots of crazy blacklisters you can still kidnap and capture. I think there's a lot of great ramifications of over the last 30 years. There were other factions that were involved that Katarina and Dom and this person all had to hide from. I think there's a lot of great backstory you could go to as well and pull up some of the backstory of what happened in the last 30 years. I don't think answering the relationship question destroys the show and completely ends the show. Now, that's us being fans and backseat drivers, of course, but in season 6 on Death Row, that's where you give that answer, because then you can get into, well, here's Katarina. Oh my gosh, what is she going to add to it? Oh my gosh, here's where Keaton and the Townsend directive. What is that going to add to it? Like, now that this answer's out there, because they're coming for him because that answer has now been revealed. I think that would have made these two seasons especially even better than they were. But because she says, I love you instead, it just like slowly declines from mid-season 6.
Yeah, I completely agree on that. I think that if we got the answer, and again, we don't know what the ultimate answer is, and maybe they're right. Maybe it is something that would completely end the show. We don't know. But based on what we've seen and what we've been shown, so I think it would end the show, because you could then move forward with them taking down all of these people. If the whole point is for Red to take these people down, they could team up, work together. You could have that dynamic still work going forward, except now we know the answers to everything.
Yeah. And you can still have the, oh, I love you, oh, I hate you, and have the flip flop thing going on, because there could be disagreements on how they handle certain situations. This is how the FBI handles it. This is how the criminal does it, you know?
Right. He doesn't have to give her the complete truth, but knowing who he is and why he is would be enough. He doesn't have to give us his past history with Katarina or whatever, you know, however, was he involved in the bombing that happened in Russia? Like, what made him? There's so much story that could come from that I think they could have kept the story going. But I'm going to have faith that they know better than we do. It's just our job to analyze it, break it down, you know, and go forward.
And analyze it, break it down. We have for over 200 episodes, and we watched each episode at least twice, and then we've rewatched it at least twice. So, I mean, I think I'm up on at least four or five watches on every episode now at this point.
Yeah, I've gone back and watched the series multiple times now just to see if anything we've learned up to this point when you rewatch teaches you anything else, and they're smarter than we are.
Yeah, it's been pretty
I haven't
solid.
Found anything yet.
Pretty solid.
Well, from the mailbag, James Steen wrote in and said, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but I think it's just ironic that the name of the street for Patreon headquarters in San Francisco is named Townsend. Troy, wouldn't you like to have one of those rats as a pet? Question, as far as what we've seen on the show, is it a moot point if Katerina is dead? Then what is the point of someone still seeking the Sikorsky archive to prove her innocence? We believe that she was fake, so it would still be a valid point.
I think that's part of the big question. You know, was Katerina Rostova the Katerina Rostova? And if she's not, then someone still needs to protect the Sikorsky archive, because that was the whole thing. Like, we're trying to find Katerina because we think Katerina is N13 because she stole this information. She tells on the recording, right, that they were talking about with her and Alan Fitch at Red's trial. That recording said, you know, they're coming after me because I stole this information. So we know Katerina Rostova stole information for the cabal. And that
and
information
Dom confirmed it too.
Yeah, very much could have been the N13 archive, you know, that she stole. And then you had the whole conversation of like, you have it and so does Red. But we can get into that at a later date.
Right. And then at some point is neither one of them actually N13.
Right. Maybe they just have the archive and N13
maybe
is trying to get the archive.
Maybe the archive is the information to find out who N13 actually is.
All good questions. So, but Rocky wrote in and said, first time caller, long time listener, love the podcast. Not to be a Red Arena apologist, but to Troy's defense from last week, Red's line that Katerina Rostova killed your family and I killed her could simply be Red acknowledging that he, as OG Katerina, was responsible for the death of Townsend's family, and that he killed fake Katerina, because at that moment, Katerina is Katerina to the rest of the world.
Yes.
The sole purpose for the entire blacklist, the culmination of the so-called 30-year project, is to take out anyone and everyone who poses a threat to Liz. As Red told Mr. Kaplan, Katerina was a traitor to two countries. The only way I can stop the threats from rising is to rise up as a greater threat than all of them. The crossing the Rubicon speech, like the parable of the farmer monologue, reflects Red Arena's crossing over to a darker path in order to protect Masha Liz, a path of death and destruction that meant leaving her previous world behind forever, a path that she fears Liz is now going down herself. The Wadsworth poem in particular, and the Mexican cavefish story that Troy so eloquently interpreted, he said that, not me. Thank you so much.
I think he likes you.
As well as the scene where Red was in Dom's garage looking through Katerina's childhood keepsakes, are further parallels of the same Red Arena's wistful reflections of a normal idyllic life, a previous world that she can never go back to. Same with the Tacoma house and why Red blew it up. It may not have been, as everyone seems to think, to erase memories of some painful tragedy, like a fire, but rather because the memories of the forever long lost idyllic life she once had there are just too painful to recall. She could have very well easily lived there as Katerina with both her mother and Dom, and may have later raised Masha there when not at Kirk's cottage. Note, Henrik Gorky's Third Symphonia, a symphony about a mother's separation from her child, plays over the background during the Tacoma House scene. One caveat, the showrunners have been very aware of the Red Arena theory since season one, so if this wasn't their original endgame, they could be purposely dropping clues to that effect to string fans along. But Lucas Reiter said, if you're trying to figure out who Reddington really is, you have to start from the question of who would care this much about Elizabeth Keegan and keeping her safe. We know Red's love for Liz is unconditional, even after all she's done to him. He's still leaving everything to her. And we know her father is dead. Red's bones in the suitcase. So there's really only one person in the world who, one, would be so distraught after her death that was faked that they physically collapse into Demi's arms next to the car. Two, would sit vigil by her bedside for over 10 months while she was in a coma. Three would agree to trade their life for hers without a moment's hesitation on more than one occasion. And only one person who four would be in a state of near panic when Dom was about to die, arrange a high-risk impromptu surgery, and then sit vigil by his side while he was in a coma, just like he did with Liz, reading halfway through Beowulf.
Lot to digest in that one. Well, as you know, I am not a Red Arena believer. I don't go there. He makes very, very valid points. It was well thought out when he wrote this out. But that just because somebody cares about somebody doesn't instantly mean that they have to be paternal or family. I have plenty of people that I care about that aren't related to me at all. And I would do those things for those people should the time ever arise that, you know, they want to go into a coma or anything. I would sit by their bedside. So I don't know. I mean, you know, sometimes we read more into it than it really is. That's part of the fun. But with this, there's so many directions that it could go again, which is why we can't negate anything because we have literally no answers.
I know. But I mean, when you go back and you watch it 5, 6, 7 times and you start putting stuff together, it's still kind of hard not to say Red Arena is still the one that kind of holds up the longest out of all the theories that are out there.
It is. But, you know, I think the old line is that you're supposed to use facts to create your theory, not use theories to create facts. So if you read it and you watch it going in and you believe that Raymond Reddington is now was Katerina Rostova, you're going to see and pick up and agree with you. There are lines in there that I've saw and I said, wow, it could be, it fits the narrative now with him saying that. But overall in the storyline, it wouldn't really to me make much sense to do this. Again, you can hide out everything else, but you wouldn't have where fake Arena and Red are sitting there and he's like, I always kept you one step ahead. Now, is that supposed to be, well, I put you out there as Katerina, but I kept you safe.
Or my father put you out there as Katerina. And because I wasn't involved in the plan, I didn't agree with his decision. So therefore that's why I've been helping you this whole time.
Right. Again, it falls whichever side of the fence you're on. That's where you're going to fall into when you read it and see it.
Which at the end of the day, even if these are filler episodes or 22 episodes is too long, at the end of the day, the dialogue of the show is what people are going to remember. They were very good at being able to write something that you could take any which way from Sunday and be able to make it fit some kind of narrative. And that's why people keep watching to this day.
Agreed. And that was one of the important lines that we didn't even talk about was when Red and Cooper are talking and Red says, you think you have the answers to this puzzle. I'm here to tell you that you don't. I am the puzzle. I thought that was such a key line because I really thought that was like almost like an homage to the fans saying right. You're seeing all these things and you think you have clues, but you have no idea what's really going on.
And we're just going to have to keep watching in order to find out.
And keep watching, we will. Well, that will conclude this discussion. So now it's time to recommend The Blacklist to your friend, your enemy, your neighbor. And when you do, please recommend they listen and subscribe to the Blacklist Exposed podcast. All the case profiles can be found at theblacklistexposed.com and everywhere great podcasts can be heard.
For more great hijinks with Aaron and myself and Rory from time to time, follow us on your favorite social media outlet. I'm at Troy Heinrichs. He's at Aaron Smirks. Rory, where can people find you?
I am at BB Rizzler on Twitter.
And of course, you can follow at the Blacklist GSM. Talk about the show, the podcast. And if you buy any drugs on the dark web, our website was not involved.
Well, big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question for next week. Who else besides Cooper is on the kill list?
Sounds like a great new show for the fall.
The kill list.
Thanks so much for being here, Rory. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it, man. Anytime, you know.
We'll see you guys next week. Take care.
See ya.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
The Tacoma House. I would never sell this country sequence for sequence secrets.
Hey, if you want to wear sequins, that's on you.